Hello. Thank you for tuning in. You are listening to ByteRadio.me's Bringing Inspiration to Earth show. For network or show information, visit www.byteradio.me or call 843-808-0777. And now, the Bringing Inspiration to Earth show with your host, Robert Sharp.
Good day, everyone, and thank you for joining us for this edition of the Bringing Inspiration to Earth show. Today, my very special guest joining us from the UK is Richard Barrett. He is author of The Metrics of Human Consciousness. History has shown that the evolution of measurement is the key to the evolution of societies, something that we take for granted since most of our measurements are already standardized. Richard believes that we are missing one very important standardized measurement, human consciousness. In his book, The Metrics of Human Consciousness, Richard delves into what consciousness is and how it can be quantified in order to significantly improve our individual, organizational, and societal performance. By creating psychological measurement techniques, Richard believes that we can change the conversation not just about what exists, but what we need to move to in order to resolve the current issues our global society is facing. Richard is founder and chairman of the Barrett Values Center, an internationally recognized thought leader on values, culture, and leadership in business and society. He is a fellow of the World Business Academy, member of the Wisdom Council of the Center for Integral Wisdom, honorary board member of the Spirit of Humanity Forum, and former values coordinator at the World Bank. For more information, you can visit his website, which is www.richardbarrett.net, and that's B-A-R-R-E-T-T.net. And I do have a direct link to his website in the show page description. So with that, I'd like to welcome Richard to the show. Good day, Richard, or good evening.
Oh, thank you so much.
Well, it is. It's such a pleasure and an honor to have you as my guest today, and to talk about this human consciousness. I read a lot about it, and as a matter of fact, I went through and used a couple of your tools that you have available, and learned a lot about myself. So that's a good thing.
Okay, so you did the personal values assessment.
Yes, I did. When we get to that part, I want to talk to you about that. I was shocked at some of my
results. Yeah, I want to talk to you about your results. Let's find out who you are.
Okay. Well, first of all, you know, I think we should probably start by talking to the telling the listeners exactly what it is that you define as human consciousness and what do you mean by metrics, that measurement of human consciousness?
Yeah, what I'm talking about here is measuring human consciousness. Well, some people say, wow, that's different or that's impossible. Well, we've been doing it now for about 18 years. I founded a company to do that, to measure the consciousness of individuals, leaders, organizations, and more recently we've been measuring the consciousness of nations. And we do that by mapping values to a model called the Seven Levels of Consciousness model. And so this model really is at the heart of the measuring system because we all operate from different levels of consciousness. And let me just give you an example so you'll see what I mean. You know, when you don't have any money and you've lost your job, you know, what's the first thought that comes into your head? It's survival. And so in that situation, you'd be operating from what I would call survival consciousness. And so there are seven stages of consciousness, and you pass through them as you get older. So the first is survival, and then we focus as young children on conforming. That's all about relationship consciousness. And then as teenagers, we want to belong, but we also want to differentiate ourselves. So we, you know, we try to look good and we do the best we can to look a bit different so we'll be respected and recognized. And And that can go on, actually, for the rest of our lives. But then the next stage is what we call individuation, where you begin to realize that there's more to life than looking good, and you begin to search for who you really are. You know, you're brought up in a cultural framework, and now you want to, you've adopted those beliefs and values, but now as you leave home and you want to find out who you are and what your values are, this is called the individuating stage of psychological development, and a lot of transformation happens at that level. And then we move to self-actualizing, where we begin to realize that we have special gifts and talents. Usually this occurs in your late 30s, early 40s. You realize you've got special gifts and talents, and you want to make use of those. And when you do, it brings you a lot of pleasure and joy. And so that's the self-actualizing stage. Then later in our 50s, we move into the integrating stage, where we want to actualize that those talents by making a difference in the world. And that means very often we have to cooperate with other people so that we can work together for the common good. And finally, when you get to your 60s and 70s, and which is about, you know, where I'm hitting right now, you get into the serving stage, which is about you, all you want to do really is serve the world and leave a legacy. And that is a stage where you bring to fruition your gifts and talents. Well, that's just a brief overview, Robert, but one point further is simply to say that whatever your values reflect which level of consciousness you're operating from. And when we spoke a moment ago, you did our free values assessment. You were asked to pick 10 values, and those values relate to these levels of consciousness. And in that way, I can tell, you know, what levels of consciousness you're operating from.
Yeah. I as I went through and looked at that and the ages, and I thought, you know, that those are the age and the stages that we go through. Those are just kind of like just the typical types of process, the actual progression of our psychological development that we go through.
Yeah, those are pretty typical. You know, the surviving stages, I call that 0 to 2 years old, where we just fresh into the world and learning the survival skills. And then that conforming stage from 2 to 8 or 9 years old, we want to fit in order to feel safe, so we conform. And then having learned how to fit in, we want to be able to differentiate ourselves so other people respect and recognize us. And that can goes from about 8 or 9 up to usually until our late 20s. But some people never get past that stage due to perhaps traumatic circumstances in the childhood where they weren't given feedback. They learn to believe that they just weren't good enough, and so they're constantly striving to excel or be perfect because they have a subconscious belief that they're really not quite good enough because they didn't get the praise that they needed when they were young. If you manage to get through that and get over those difficulties, then you move into the higher stages of development where you begin to access, let me put it this way, your soul gifts, your gifts and talents which are naturally yours.
Yeah, you know, that I was a bit surprised with the discussion of the soul. I mean, I shouldn't be. I mean, I thoroughly believe in and recognize that as an aspect of our being. But, you know, to see that aspect as a part of a model, you know, of consciousness development, to me it was a pleasant surprise. But now in the seven stages that you were the seven levels that you were talking about, the lower parts or the, you know, survival and that kind of thing, those kind of deal with more of an ego based versus soul based. Can you talk a little bit about, you know, the, you know, that whole soul aspect in relation to the seven levels?
Yeah, well, can I first address that surprise
Sure.
you got when you mentioned the soul? Because you know, and you said, you know, well, a model with a soul in it, that's strange. You see, yeah, no, because I'm going to tell you a story, and this happened to me just 3 weeks ago. I was giving a keynote speech at the top European business school, and the conference was on the link between spirituality and creativity, an unusual topic in a business school. And I did the opening keynote speech, which was looking at the spiritual / psychological dimensions of creativity. And my whole idea here was that when you're able to access your soul, your creativity goes up. And if you go to the website, you can find the whole set of my slides on this. But here's the point. I started this speech off by doing a little exercise with the audience, about nearly 300 people. I said, look, I'm going to make pairs of statements. And if this statement is correct, I want you to stand up. And if it's not correct, just stay sitting down. So I started by just giving them a trial. I said, I have a car. And nearly everybody stood up. And then I said, I am a car. And of course, nobody stood up. And then I said, I have a body, and I am a body. When finally I got to, I have a soul, nearly everybody stood up. And then I said, I am a soul. And everybody stayed standing up, which was interesting in itself, because there's obviously a confusion as to whether you have a soul or you are a soul. But here's the key point. The following presenter, who was presenting on neuroscience, the first slide he showed said, here are the assumptions that we make in neuroscience. And the first assumption was, there is no soul. Here we were at the business conference where everybody had stood up and said they had a soul. I mean, it was so ironic.
Wow.
That actually happened to me just 3 weeks ago. So that leaves you wondering, well, okay, in the academic world, if they can't own up to the soul, you know, what are they missing? Because for me, my soul is very real in my life. But anyhow, that was my story, and now let me get back to your question about the earlier stages of psychological development. Well, the first three stages which we go through when we're from being born up to the age of mid-20s, early 30s, is all about ego development. It's about satisfying what Abraham Maslow called our deficiency needs. We want to be able to survive. We want to be loved and belonging, because that brings us safety. And we want to be recognized and respected in our peer group, because that brings us security. And these are, Maslow called these deficiency needs. If we can't meet these needs, we feel a little anxious and maybe even fearful. But once we've got these needs met, we don't even think about them anymore, unless something comes up in our lives where, as I said earlier, we lose our job or something like that, and we lose our savings, and immediately we pop down to the survival level of consciousness. So these are seven stages of development that we go through, but they're also levels of consciousness. So we grow in stages and we operate at levels, and these first three levels all have to do with ego consciousness and satisfying our survival, safety, and security needs.
Okay, so and that's the ego development, and then the other four, the individuation, self-actualization, integrating, and serving. Those are all soul development. Those are all, you know, or soul unfoldment, I think, is the phrase that you use in your book. Aspect to consciousness. Oh my goodness, we lost. Okay, we're back there. Right? Okay, so let's see. We were talking about the the three lower levels.
I was explaining about the ego.
Yeah.
I don't know whether you caught all of that.
Yes, I did get that, and then I just kind of went, I think we dropped right when I was, we were going to maybe talk just a hair more about
exactly.
The
soul unfolding. You were going to say something, so why don't you just go ahead and do that?
Okay, yeah. So we talked about the ego development in the three. Now, the four upper levels, so to speak, deal with the soul unfoldment. And those are the things that once those physical deficiencies are met, that's kind of where our focus then is and where our consciousness grows or expands.
Yes, once we've taken care of our deficiency needs, which are physical, but also emotional, love and belonging and respect and recognition, by this time we're in our late 20s and something significant happens to most people at that time. They stop being single and they get married and have children and suddenly they begin to expand their sense of identity because you can't go operating from self-interest when you have a family. You expand your sense of identity, your sense of consciousness to include your family. And so now when you make decisions, not just for yourself, but for your whole family. And this is a higher level of consciousness that you begin to operate from. Now, usually what happens at this stage, you also leave home and you may have been to college or university or had some form of higher education. And as you leave home and establish your own home, you begin to realize that, the beliefs and values that your parents had may not be your beliefs and values. And so you begin the search for finding out who you really are, finding out your true self. And this is the individuating stage of psychological development where you not only let go of those values and beliefs that no longer serve you, but you also begin to realize that, the things that upset you may have some inner cause in yourself, and they have, because they're usually the things that upset you are your subconscious fear-based beliefs about not being able to meet those deficiency needs. And you learn these beliefs when you're quite young, and later on they come back and haunt you in a way, and that's a lot of the work that psychotherapists do is to help people get past those beliefs. And now, as long as these deficiency needs, subconscious beliefs are showing up, it's difficult to move past the individuating stage of psychological development. But let's say that you're able to do that, and you then move into self-actualization, which is really about connecting more to your unique self. At the previous level, you were connecting to your true values. Now you're beginning to connect to your unique gifts and talents and wanting to explore those. And so this is highly significant because now you start looking for work which aligns with your, not only with your values, but you start looking for work that aligns with your sense of mission or your vocation or your calling or whatever it is that you're passionate about. And you if you can't find work that aligns with your values and your passion, you don't feel as if you're growing. And, unfortunately, mm-hmm. there's a lot of people in jobs like that. Now, here's the interesting thing. We use these models and tools to help people to map the values of organizations so that organizations can find out where their employees are at and how they see the current culture and how they see the desired culture. And by making these measurements, we can grow and evolve the culture of organizations so that people feel more cared for, that their needs are being met, and therefore are more energized in going to work and more committed. And you get higher levels of employee engagement when the organization is able to care for the needs of its employees. So this is not just theoretical. This is very practical. And we've been doing this work now for 18 years and 5,000 or 6,000 companies and 4,000 or 5,000 leaders have been using our tools. We've even mapped the values of 26 nations. But anyhow, I'm getting ahead of myself there. maybe you've got some further questions about these.
Yeah, that's okay. Well, that's great. That's great. And I do have some questions kind of revolving around those, but a little bit later, because I do want to, you know, we talked about the measurement, you know, we're talking about these values in these seven levels, and then kind of right after the break, I want to talk a little bit about the personal value assessment. But with these values, you talked about, we may be at one particular, consciousness level. There may be something that happens, like a traumatic event or something, that may all of a sudden have us refocusing on survival, where it wasn't before. Is there a whenever we have those, either the traumatic, and I believe in your book you also talk about peak experiences that kind of move us up a notch, so to speak, as far as our experience. Are those just like a temporary kind of occurrences that we may have a basic level that we're at and that we maybe have variations on occasion?
Yeah, that's exactly right, Robert. As we move, as we get older, we move through these stages of psychological development. They are kind of natural stages, and as we shift to a new level, our needs change and our values change. Now, if you have a traumatic experience or a peak experience where, let's say, you have a really spiritual experience, it lifts you almost to a higher level, higher state of consciousness, let's put it that way. And one of the most interesting ones is when people have near-death experiences. They're clinically dead, and they have this experience of white light and love, etc., and then they come back into their bodies. And that changes them significantly because they no longer fear death. And that has a huge impact on their lives and can help them move forward with their psychological development. Similarly, you can have a really traumatic experience which leads you to question what your life is about. It may be an accident, it may be losing a loved one, it could be anything, but it stops you in your tracks and you go, well, I got to get to the bottom of this. I need to understand what's going on. And that can also lead to an impulse to turn inside and question who you are and what's important to you and what's the meaning in your life. And that can also pull you forward in your in the evolution of your psychological development.
Yeah, okay. You know, because that was the one thing. And, we talked a little bit about organizations. Do organizations have that same kind of possibility, like maybe a bad fourth quarter, something that, to their bottom line. Have you noticed in your work with organizations that they may have those types of either trauma or peak experiences in a business kind of situation?
Yeah. So the culture. What we do is we measure the culture of the organization by mapping the values, and we do it in a very specific way. We ask employees to pick 10 values about who they are, and then 10 values about how they see the organization operating, and 10 values about how they like to see it operating. And in those gaps, you see the pathway forward to transformation. Now, one of the things that we can measure in the current culture is what we call cultural entropy. That's the degree of dysfunction in the organization. And we measure that by adding up the number of votes that employees have for what we call potentially limiting values against positive limiting values. So what is a potentially limiting value? That's something like in an organization that would be like bureaucracy or hierarchy or internal competition, things that create dysfunction and prevent employees from using all their energies to add value. It takes a lot of energy to do bureaucracy. It takes a lot of energy to do internal competition, etc. And hierarchy just blocks effectiveness. So these are potentially limiting values. So when we ask employees, you know, pick 10 values about how your organization operates, they can pick these potentially limiting values, or they can pick positive values. So what we found is that when the proportion of values picked is about 10% for these potentially limiting values, that's quite low, and that usually means that it's quite a high-performing organization. But when the level of cultural entropy, that's the proportion of votes for potential limiting values, is in the 20s, 30s, and 40s, that's a lot of dysfunction. And we find that those organizations are not so effective, not so profitable, have a lower productivity, that's income per capita, than other organizations. And so there's a direct link there between cultural entropy and employee engagement and success. Now, we can measure all of that by simply doing this values survey. And so the question then is, well, you know, how is the culture of the organization created? If the culture is so important to the success, you know, where does the culture come from? Well, the culture is a reflection of the leader's consciousness, where the leader is in the terms of these stages of psychological development. And also, the legacy of past leaders who had values, and these values got included in the systems, policies, and procedures of the organization and in the incentives. And so those values from past leaders are still showing up because they're, in a sense, they're in the incentives of the organization. So when you do a cultural transformation, you know, you need to take a look at, you know, the values of the leaders and help them grow and evolve. And you also need to take a look at what are the values that are inherent in the systems, policies, and procedures, and also change them. I often say, look, if you want to change your organization, you either change the leaders or the leaders change. You've got a choice. And some leaders, of course, you know, back off from that. But many accept the challenge and say, yeah, I get that.
Yeah. Well, that's great. Obviously, if there's the leaders, if they recognize the fact that either they change or they leave, you know, that you know, kind of a clear example. But the willingness to do that, too, and be open to recognizing that entropy, you know, then to me that is that would be like the basis for kind of really of change, you know, and of actually an effective leader too, to be able to recognize that.
Absolutely. So one of our tools is called a leadership values assessment, where where does, you know, how does cultural entropy come in? I said it's all about the leaders. Well, the leaders, in fact, everybody can operate with personal entropy. That is, we measure that by asking for feedback. So when you get feedback, that means we ask 10 or 15 people to pick 10 values about how you operate, and you go online and pick 10 values about how you think you operate, and you compare the two. Now, the top 10, what we look at is the values that people say you operate with. Well, we take the proportion of potentially limiting values, and that becomes personal entropy. And so, you know, most people have pretty low personal entropy, either zero, maybe 5 or 10%. But what we have been able to see is and correlate is that leaders with high personal entropy, 15, 20, 25%, actually run organizations with high cultural entropy. So we've been able to make that link between the personal entropy of the leader and the cultural entropy of the organization. Now, what's the word entropy? The word entropy comes from the second law of thermodynamics, and basically it's the amount of disorder in a system. So what we're really saying is that people with personal entropy have a lot of disorder, and this disorder arises from the fact that they have subconscious fear-based beliefs that keep them operating from the selfish ego perspective. And so when you can get rid of those subconscious fear-based beliefs about satisfying your deficiency needs, then, you know, you can grow and develop. And that's, you know, that's how it all hangs together.
Yeah, excellent. Well, Richard, I want to take just a quick 90-second break here. I do want to invite anyone who's listening, if you would like to call in and ask Richard any questions, you can call in at 619-789-4359. Or for those of you who are listening live in the chat room now and you have a question that you would like for me to pose to Richard, you can feel free to type it in the chat room and we will get to that right after the break. And so, Richard, when we come back, I want to delve into the PVA, the personal values assessment, and kind of tell you what mine was and see what happens with that, okay?
Sure.
Okay, everyone stay tuned. We'll be back in about 90 seconds.
This is Robert Sharp from Bringing Inspiration to Earth. There are several ways for a win-win situation where you can support our work and you receive a quality product. You can purchase the book or ebook of Joy Potential or It's No Secret Spirituality Bites. Each book has helped readers shift their perspective away from negativity towards a happier, less stressful life. Or you can shop at our wellness store, where we offer essential oils, personal care, and wellness products. I am a very frugal shopper, and these are high-quality items I use that really contribute to my well-being. Or you can purchase our amazing nature photo greeting cards. These are great all-occasion, unique 5x7 folding cards. They're my most popular nature photos, and everyone who has received one raves about the scene. All options are available at our website, www.biteradio.me, and I am very appreciative of your support of our efforts and the work of our special radio guests.
Okay, everyone. Thank you for staying with us. Again, today, my very special guest is Richard Barrett, author of The Metrics of Human Consciousness. Again, you can find out more about Richard, his books, also about his slide presentations, video presentations, articles, and just a whole bunch of other stuff by visiting his website, which is richardbarrett.net, B-A-R-R-E-T-T.net. And again, I do have a direct link to his website in the show page description. Definitely pick up his book. I found it very educational and informative. And also, I do have a direct link to the personal values assessment that we're going to be talking about in a few moments. I have a direct link to that as well in the show page description. So if you want to go ahead and give that a try and get your report. So with that, we're back, Richard.
Good. Yes, okay. So the personal values assessment is www.valuescenter.com. That's V-A-L-U-E-S-C-E-N-T-R-E, spelt in the European way. .com and then /PVA, personal values assessment. And having picked out the values that are important to you, about 2 or 3 minutes later, you get a report. And Robert, you've got one right.
Yes, I did. And I must say that, when it says, it kind of gives you a little dot representation of your 10
yep.
selections of values, it kind of placed among the 7 levels, and also then gives you a readout as to what your values show. And I have to admit that what it said my value showed is very much representative of me. I mean, what I believe that my values are. But okay,
so the description that we gave you aligned with who you think you are.
Yeah, it did. It did very much so. When I went through, basically I just kind of highlight some of it. I mean, it was empathy and consideration are important, flexibility and
actually, Robert, why don't you start at the bottom and work up and let me know what
okay.
they are, and then I can make some comments
okay.
about it, if
okay,
you don't
perfect.
Mind.
Okay, no, absolutely. No, I don't mind at all. Okay, we'll start at the bottom. I don't have anything. I have zero in the bottom one.
That's level one, that's survival, nothing.
That's right. So does that mean that
well, no, let's just take the first three levels and see what happens.
Okay, first three
so the
levels,
relationship
okay.
level, that's the next one.
The relationship level, I had two.
What were they?
Two in there. Let's see here. Caring and friendship.
Yep. And the level three?
I had nothing in there.
Okay. Okay, and so now at level four?
Now, level four was my most popular.
that's the transformation level. That's interesting. You run a transformational radio program, and that's where all your values are. Tell me, what are they?
Okay, they were adaptability, entrepreneurial, perseverance, and personal growth.
Okay, so we've got six values. What about the last four?
The last four, three of the four, were in the next level, number five.
Okay, internal cohesion. Yeah, that's the level of self-actualization.
Okay, and those were the ones that I had in that area were fairness, humor, and fun, and patience. And then the last one was at the very top, the number seven, and that was compassion.
So one of the things I notice about media, Robert, is that values have different linkages. So you've got quite a lot of relationship values. People are really important to you in your life. I mean, you have compassion there. You've got friendship. You've got caring. You had some other ones that were relationship values. Yeah, no, you, Robert, you can't really exist without people. You just love people. That's one of the first things that pops right out of your evaluation there.
Okay, yeah. Well, it is really important. I do find interaction. Though, I'm quite content with solitude, but I'm not one that has to be out among people, and I'm not.
Care about people a lot.
Yes, that is very true.
And that what was interesting was that adaptability, was it, and entrepreneurship that came up?
Correct. Yeah, that was in the fourth level. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and that's perseverance. So that's an interesting mixture: adaptability, perseverance, and entrepreneurship. These are really good qualities. If you're in business or wanting to run a business, these are really essential. You've got to flow with what's going on. You've got to keep persevering, and you've got to be an entrepreneur if you're really going to make your business work.
Yeah, those are it was very interesting because just the process of looking at the list of values. And then going through, there were several that I kind of maybe made a choice, and I thought, this one's more important than that, So it was to me a very interesting process to narrow it down to the ten top choices.
Yeah, no, it's a very interesting. It makes you think about what's important to me.
Yeah, very much so. So now looking at this, of course, now with my age, I should be, up there with that level six and seven, according to that one chart. But it seems
right.
Like I've got quite a bit in that four and five, that personal transformational area. And I know that one of the areas, when it says level four, letting go of fears, and the courage to develop and grow, it seems that that one that was where I had the most of my values lie, and I find that those are one of those areas that you talked about growing up and what the values that are instilled in childhood, and that's when fear was one of my major. I had one of the best teachers in fear and worry that money could buy or parenting could buy.
You're a late it sounds like you're a little bit of a late individuator, that you kind of got held back a little bit, but you know, you're really making progress in that area right now, and there's that certain aspects of your, who you are as a soul, which you've already connected to, and that's that compassion which comes out at level 7. You know, you've connected to that, and it would seem to suggest that also that, you know, bringing that compassion for others towards yourself, having compassion for yourself, would be a step forward in order to help you to move past the fears, etc., and would help you with the personal growth, which was one of your values at level 4, I believe.
Yeah. Now, if I were to do this, take this assessment in 6 months or so, could it change? I mean, does it change? You know, I mean.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you know, it might do. So what generally changes in a 6 month or a year? You may have some of the values the same. Others may be slightly different, but they'll be at the same levels of consciousness. That's the interesting thing. Yeah, but if you come back in 10 years, or if you were to, you know, have done this 10 years earlier, you would have seen a shift. You know, we've studied data for in our national surveys where we've looked at different age groups and which values scored most in different age groups, and picked on particular values and seen how those values, the priority of those values at different ages. So, for example, friendship is for people in the teenagers and people in their 20s, friendship is really important. And what's interesting is that friendship becomes less important in terms of priority in values. I'm not saying it's less important as a value. It just moves down the priority list from being a teenager to being, you know, 40 or 50 years old. And then in some ways that's obvious because, you know, when you're a teenager and in your 20s, you know, you don't have a family of your own. So you're very dependent on your friends. So friendship as a priority goes down over your life and levels off in your 50s and 60s. Whereas interestingly, honesty goes the opposite direction. We become more and more honest as we get older, and you know, by the time you get to 40, 45 or 50, honesty begins to peak out, because I think people realize that at that age how important honesty is to their life, to their relationships, to trust, to their work. And so that's interesting how honesty increases as a priority, but friendship decreases a priority as you go through your life.
Now, we talk about kind of these as a higher level, higher and lower, you know, just kind of in a directional kind of manner. Is there higher, better?
I was just going to say exactly where I thought we were going. You see, here's the interesting thing. Higher isn't better. What you really, and this is a comment, I'll explain what I mean in a moment, but when I look back at your particular chart, you had no values at level 1, the survival, and no values at level 3, self-esteem. And so when I see that, I say, well, you know, have you mastered those levels or are you in denial about them? You know, because when no values show up at a particular level, it means you've either mastered them or you really, you ignore them because, you know, you're in denial. It'd be great if you had values at every level of consciousness. That meant that you could handle survival situations, you can handle relationship situations, you can handle self-esteem situations, etc. And so, 100,000 people have done this particular assessment or more. And, and of course, we don't look at those assessments. I only look at them if people show them to me. But you know, in terms of the organizational assessments that we've done for thousands of organizations, I do see those assessments. And what is interesting is that the best leaders are those who operate from full spectrum consciousness. In other words, when they pick 10 values, you see at least one value showing up at each level. And this is, sometimes we see people who have all their values in the upper half, and which is like, and you know, these people are generally speaking are not very good with the practical aspects of life. You know, they may not be good at making their accounts balance or even having enough income. They may not be good at relationships, when we map the values of non-governmental organizations, of the caring for the environment and things like that, we often see in the current culture the values in the upper levels of consciousness. But when we look at the desired culture that employees are asking for, the values are lower down in the first three levels about really getting organized, because employees realize that, you know, it's all well and good having this higher purpose and these higher levels of consciousness, but unless you get organized, you can't really be effective as an organization.
Yeah.
Now, you know, for public, private organizations, for profit organizations, it's the other way around. You know, the people tend to be exploited. So we see in the current culture values in the first three levels, and when we look at the desired culture, the values are at the fourth, fifth, and sixth levels of consciousness, where employees are saying, you know, enough with all this cultural entropy, we need you to transform. So it's interesting, that dichotomy between not-for-profit and profit organizations.
Yeah, you know, that was what I wondered, because, you know, that, you know, when you look at the mission, so to speak, of a particular organization, and, you know, you have those whose values, or, you know, whose desired outcome is to be, you know, compassionate, you know, thinking of others, you know, really helping, you know, helping the world, you know, that kind of thing, versus, you know, for profit. You know, to me, it was interesting. Now, with organizations who have one kind of set of values, you mentioned the cultural entropy. Now, if my values, like, you know, my particular structure, you know, let's say that, you know, mine was very much in the lower three, you know, kind of in the practical, you know, survival, that kind of thing. And the organization that I worked for was one of, you know, of the, in the higher levels, kind of focused on that, where their values were, you know, much, you know, more philanthropic versus actual practical. Would that difference in value, what's important, would that basically feed into my dissatisfaction or happiness or lack of with working at that particular organization? I mean, is it kind of like a measurement of happiness?
You nailed it. You know, where your personal values lie, actually, that's where you want to see your organization in the current culture. So when you see a lack of equilibrium between where your personal values are, where the current culture is, and where the desired culture is. Now, very often the desired culture looks a lot like where your personal values are in terms of levels of consciousness. We use a slightly different word template for picking values for the organization than we do for the personal individual, because, you know, as an individual, you don't have values such as customer satisfaction, etc. So anyhow, but what we tend to see is that the levels of consciousness, your personal levels, are similar to the desired culture, and often the current culture is below that. And what you want to do is you want the organization to care about your needs and to shift to these higher order values. And then you reduce the cultural level of cultural entropy and you feel more committed and have a higher level of engagement. Now, companies tend to use these tools year after year. So they measure 1 year, they see where the gaps are, they make choices about what to focus on, and then they come back the next year and measure again. And what we see generally over time is that the level of cultural entropy goes down and the level of employee engagement goes up. And at the same time, productivity goes up, employee satisfaction goes up. And so really, I have another book called The Values-Driven Organization, where I explain all of this and show how to build a values-driven organization. And these are the most successful organizations on the planet because they care about not just about the needs of employees, they care about the needs of their customers, they care about the needs of the community, they care about the needs of society. And when you do care about the needs of all of those stakeholders, guess what? They all care about you and your organization. And this is really what makes a highly successful organization. And you only have to look at the, you know, there's a list of the 100 best companies to work for. And I did some analysis on that. I took 20 of those 100 best companies to work for, and I did what's known as a back forecast. I said, if I'd invested $10,000 in each of in 20 of these companies, these best companies to work for, 10 years ago, you know, where how much money would I have made now? What would have been my return on the investment? And it turned out that I would have had an annual rate of return of 15%, whereas the S&P 500 is only returning like 4 or 5%. So when I did this analysis, I had it done by Wells Fargo Bank, actually. I didn't do it myself. And the Wells Fargo investment people said to me, man, this is amazing. We had no idea this would be a great investment strategy. And you see, all I did was take the best companies to work for. Well, what is it about the best companies to work for? Guess what? They're the best companies to work for. They care about their employees. And so, you know, so it all hangs together and makes a lot of sense. So when you care about your employees in a company, you know, your company is successful.
Yeah. Well, you know, Richard, we're down to the last 5 minutes here. This has really been great. You know, one of the things that I learned from reading your book and actually taking that personal values assessment is to really kind of take a close look at my values and look at, you know, what is working and what is not, you know, like who would be good companies for me to work with. Or organizations to work with, and those who weren't. So it's very practical in its application.
Yep, very, very practical. And people say about it, you know, it's simple and elegant. It's actually quite easy to understand the model, and you know, it only takes like 5 or 10 minutes to do the survey. But the wealth of information that we get out of this is phenomenal. And what I've been doing, you know, we've been very successful at doing this with organizations around the world. We work in 90 different countries. But what I've been trying to do now is to introduce this into communities and nations. And we've mapped the values of 20-some nations. And I believe that this tool enables a community or a nation to find out what's working in the community or the nation and what's not working. And we can use the tool, therefore, to help the leaders of the community or nation to improve the way that the community or nation functions.
With nations, so there's, I mean, you're talking about such a large population that you're dealing with that, I mean, you truly have probably people in every conceivable kind of combination, you know, within that country. So, in order to, how do you, I guess, establish at such a high level, you know, what values are? I mean, to me, it seems that no matter what you do, what you focus on, there's going to be someone who thinks that that's inappropriate.
That is true, but there's nothing to stop you from taking the average pulse, and that's, You know, we do a statistically valid sample of, you know, of teenagers, 20-year-olds, 30-year-olds, 40-year-olds, if you, and we analyze that. Now, we've done that in the USA for 3 years running, and you can see all this data by going to valuescenter.com, our website. And what we found out was really interesting, that, believe it or not, Democrats and Republicans have, apart from their top 10 personal values, there's only one difference.
Oh.
They all share the same values, but guess what? You know what? They don't share the same beliefs about how to manifest those values. That's the issue.
Okay. There's where the the details are. Okay. Well, that's good. That's something
That's how it differs. It's like, so your beliefs, you may share. So you could get, let's say you get, you know, six of the world's religion leaders sitting around a table and ask them to talk, come to an agreement about their beliefs. They'll never do it. If you get them to come to an agreement about their values, you'll probably get there really quickly. See, the values unite us because they're deep, they lie deep in our hearts, whereas beliefs are contextual and they tend to separate us. And that's an amazing thing. You know, values unite and beliefs separate.
Okay. Well, great. Well, you know, I do want to mention at your valuescenter.com, and that's C-E-N-T-R-E, you have such a wealth of information. I mean, I was lost. I went from one article to another. I mean, it's a great source of information. So I definitely want to recommend
it. Yeah, well, we're updating the website. Robert, we're updating the website right now, so in about a month's time it'll be a lot easier to navigate. But you're right, there's a fantastic amount of information there.
It is great. Well, Richard, thank you very much for your time today. I thoroughly enjoyed our conversation, and I really enjoyed your book. I'm sure that I'll do a little Amazon review for you there, because I really liked it. So thank you very much for your time.
Thank you very much, Robert.
My pleasure. Again, everyone, today my very special guest has been Richard Barrett, author of The Metrics of Human Consciousness. He's also written other books, Evolutionary Coaching, The Values-Driven Organization, What My Soul Told Me. There's a whole bunch of books that you can go ahead and check out. Again, there is a direct link to his website in the show page description, richardbarrett.net. And again, also in the description is a direct link to the personal values assessment that we spoke about earlier. So everyone, I want to thank you for joining us for this edition of the Bringing Inspiration to Earth show. And until we meet again.
Thank you for tuning in. You've been listening to the Bringing Inspiration to Earth show. Be sure to visit our website at www.biteradio.me. That's biteradio.me. You can also find us on Facebook and Twitter at Byte Radio Me. And our shows are also available as a free podcast from iTunes. And until we meet again, remember to be a bright light by bringing inspiration to your world and to the lives of those you touch.